And Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime, with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning, live from our Clare Court location. The horse has been working out this morning. Always fun to be here in the morning, and it's another great morning. Should be a great Saturday afternoon at the races. We talked about in the handicapper's report earlier. Great day of racing around the world. The King George over in Europe, down at Monmouth, the Haskell, and a nice undercard of stakes here at Saratoga Coaching Club American Oaks and the Caress. Also, don't forget, it's Lustgarten Day. Come on up, 11:30 to 12:30 by the Jocks Room. You can have the trainers sign some memorabilia for you and make a donation to a really good cause, certainly. So keep that in mind as well today here at Saratoga. Today here on Racing Across America, a little bit later on, we got a couple people coming over from the Ken McPeak Barn. Ken was going to come over, but he couldn't make it, so he sent some able substitutes, but some folks who know about the runners. He has Butterbean coming up in the Coaching Club American Oaks. Tomorrow in the Shoe V, Crazy Beautiful. We'll talk about those. And some other horses that may show up later in the meet or be worth watching down the road wherever they wind up. So we'll talk about that with the McPeak folks coming up in a few. A little bit later on, Sal Kuhman. He won the Lake George yesterday with Dolce Zell. He has Caravelle coming up in today's Caress down at Monmouth. He has Adhamo in the United Nations. So lots to talk about with him as well, but lots to talk about top of the show with our friend Mike McAdam from the Daily Gazette. He's up here day in and day out, usually buzzing around the backstretch this time of the morning, but we were lucky enough to get him over here. And so we'll talk some racing. We'll kind of recap the action so far and maybe get some ideas for this afternoon and beyond. Mike, good morning.
Thanks for having me, Seth. Good morning, everybody.
Let's talk a little bit about the early part of the meet. And I have the stats here from the recap yesterday so far. Early part of the meet, Irad Ortiz, 10 wins, Rosario and Saez, 9. Then it jumps down to Jose Ortiz with 6. And on the trainer side, Chad Brown with 7. Todd Fletcher with 3 wins yesterday, sitting in number 6, sitting second with number 6 winners. And then Christoph Clement and Brad Cox sitting with 4. I don't know if there's any huge surprises on the human side of things so far.
Not really. You're bracing for Chad Brown to just zoom and take off at some point, but it hasn't happened yet after Todd Fletcher had that big day yesterday and had an interesting horse, keep me in mind, that won an allowance race before the feature. So there hasn't been separation yet. We'll anticipate that happening at some point because Chad obviously is loaded like he always is, but still early, so it's still wide open.
We were looking, we were talking about the winner in the first race. I loved it. I had it on top, and I got 11-1, but I'm going to be interested to go back. I meant to do it last night, but I want to go back and see what Chad's ROI is so far, because I think he's had one winning favorite, and yesterday the $24 horse. So far, pretty good numbers for the Chad Brown run, for the Chad Brown fans.
And I think Fletcher had a 19-1 come in yesterday, too. So, I mean, it's
the double.
Saratoga, it's double. Craziness, and keep your eye out for long shots, of course. There's certain routine things that happen. Chad's going to win a lot, and he's going to win a lot of big races. Likewise, Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, people like that. But there's bombs out there. It always amazes me when a Fletcher goes off at 19-1 and then wins, because you're like, well, why didn't I play that? It's a classic second guess, but you'll see stuff like that.
Yeah, and you hear it for the rest of the day. You hear everybody,
of course,
lamenting.
Yeah, or I had that, that one person that.
you know, going down your Twitter feed, and I know you popped out of the box the other day, and we're headed out home, the Rochester area, but I know subsequently you stopped by Finger Lakes on Monday, saw Barisi win the New York Derby, talked a little bit about the performance there. And you would think, we were talking about the other day, he's tried open company before, kind of unsuccessfully, mm-hmm. but you would have to think off the New York Derby, why not shoot for the decent money and the Albany up here off of that win?
Why wouldn't you, exactly? I really stepped in it and got lucky. My family's got a house on Canandaigua Lake this week, and I was able to get away from the track on the dark days Monday and Tuesday. And my normal ritual in July, if I'm home, is to try to swing up to Finger Lakes. And I just really got lucky that the New York Derby happened to be Monday. I was just going to show up and bet the early double and go back to the and jump in the lake. And then I looked at the entries and I was like, oh, wow, Todd Fletcher and Chad Brown have one in here. Mike Maker's got Barisi in here. John Velazquez and Manny Franco and Ricardo Santana traveled out there. So I kind of postponed my arrival at Finger Lakes and got there in time for the New York Derby. And Barisi was much the best. Best idea, I think, was Pletcher's horse, and Chad Brown had a horse named Aggregation, and they were strung out at the finish line. I think Barisi's, I haven't talked to Mike Maker about this yet, but I believe Barisi, you know, they gave him the shot at, you know, against open company and got him, but he's New York bred conditions, he can fit those, so they took a swing with the New York Derby. And he won for fun, so the Albany makes a lot of sense. They used to have a little feature called the Big Apple Triple.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm not sure who funded that. It was like the New York Thoroughbred Breeders or somebody like that funded $250,000 bonus if you won the Mike Lee New York Derby at Finger Lakes and the Albany at Saratoga. And a horse named Tin Cup Chalice, who was based in Finger Lakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Wound up winning it. It was one of the happiest winner circles I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was a fun story.
There was like 50 people in the winner circle. They'd probably never been to Saratoga before and just so genuinely happy, not just the check, but to win a big race at Saratoga. So, you know, I fully expect, again, without having spoken to Mike Maker, that we're going to see Barisi in the Big Apple Triple doesn't exist anymore, but the Albany certainly is. You know, the showcase three-year-old dirt race for New York Reds.
Yeah, I remember that. And that was kind of fun, that Big Apple Triple with the bonus for sweeping all three. Again, the Mike Lee downstate.
It was a heck of an enticement to get people to run in the Albany, because a lot of times you might hit two but not all three. And then if you win the first two, you got to run in that
third.
But I
forgot about Tin Cup Chalice. That was a nice story there. Speaking of nice stories, let's take a look at some of the action today, because on the three-year-old side, we talked about this on the handicapping show earlier. Coaching Club American Oaks has, you know, the two horses that are probably sitting at the top right now in the three-year-old filly division, and they one or the other will maybe define themselves. I could have gone either way in here, and I'll tell the guys down in the control room, you can pull up the replays. We're going to take a look at the Belmont. Mo Donegal will win the number six, but Nest runs second, and we'll also go back to her win, the grade one Ashland a little earlier this year. When we watch that, Nest will be the number four. And so Nest comes in, you know, off a grade one win a few starts back, and then this second against the boys last time. Secret Oath wins the Kentucky Oaks, then runs fourth in the Preakness. As I say, I could have gone either way, but I eventually tilted slightly towards Secret Oath. What are your thoughts on the coaching club?
Well, having spoken to Todd Fletcher yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever it was, I didn't know which way to go with these two either. There's no speed in here. Steve Asmussen's Horse Society looks like the only speed, but she hasn't really run all that fast. So, you know, I'm okay with distilling this down to Nest and Secret Oath, and I just really couldn't separate them until I talked to Pletcher. And I specifically asked him, were you guys considering skipping the Coaching Club American Oaks, going straight to the Alabama? And he said, yes, we were. And then she came out of the Belmont and was doing so well and actually put on weight that they were like, strike while the iron is hot, let's jump in the Oaks and try to get another grade one. So just based on that one little factor right there, you know, I was right down the middle, 50-50. I kind of swayed a little toward Nest, so that's who I picked in my little take that I do, my little paragraph that I submit on our handicapping page.
I'm going to be interested to see where the betting public goes. We talked about this morning, too. David Aragona made Nest the even money favorite, slightly over Secret Oath at 6-5. I'm going to be interested to see the betting.
I was a little surprised it wasn't the other way around, because I think Secret Oath still has the better resume despite the fourth and the Preakness, where she just had a bad trip and Dwayne Lucas is willing to just cross a line through that. Maybe not cross a line through it, but he's not going to have that drive his decisions or, you know, look back on it as a bad performance. So so I was a little surprised that the odds on the morning line weren't flip-flopped on those two. But again, they're so tough to separate that, you know, maybe the bettors at Saratoga will lean toward Ness just because it's Rapoli and it's Pletcher. But Secret Oath has really been at the top of the division since she won the Kentucky Oaks. And there's still a lot of lingering belief that she's the best three-year-old filly in the country.
So. And Dwayne Lucas, I think, adds a great storyline.
It really is.
And being up here at Saratoga with the string this year.
Yep.
Be interesting to see, you know. Hopefully we'll get him over here some morning. But as I say, the venerable Dwayne Lucas adds another storyline to the entire meet.
Maybe he'll come over on his pony. He's still getting on his – he's 86 years old. I talked to him earlier in the meet because he's got 16 horses here that he can be hands-on. And, he, you know, the days of the 90s are long gone when he had, like, three strings with 60 horses
over. Yeah, he was essentially the guy who started that.
He really was. And then people like Pletcher and Chad Brown kind of picked up on it.
Yeah, and so as I say, he'll be a fun storyline to watch going forward. Fun storylines tomorrow as well. I saw you wrote a little article about the Shoe V in that. We're looking for another matchup between Clariere and Malathot. I've liked Clariere all along, and let's go back and take a little look at the replay of the Ogden Phipps June 11th down at Belmont. Clariere is going to be the number four, Malathot the number three. A ding-dong battle that is decided with Clariere on top by a head. Latruska, unfortunately, didn't show up this day. Winds up fifth in the field of five as the big favorite. But Clariere and Malathot did put on a show. And then short field tomorrow in the Shoe V, short field of four. We're looking for them to maybe ding-dong it down the stretch again. And we'll see how it plays out there. As I say, Clariere, the number four. Malathot, the number three. It is a great battle in the Phipps. We're looking forward to it again tomorrow. What did you think in the SUV?
I'm not going to reveal my pick because it's going to be in the paper tomorrow. But I will say,
fair enough.
And I haven't even written it yet, and I haven't really finalized it. I will say that again with my conversation with Todd Pletcher, they're adding blinkers for Malathot for the first time ever. Something they've actually thought about last year, but they didn't want to disrupt what was developing into a three-year-old filly championship season. So, but they finally got to the point. He said there was a little subtle thing that you could notice in she has a tendency to look around and get curious and put on the brakes a little bit. So even in the Ogden Phipps, he said he noticed it a little bit. So something they've been thinking about for probably at least a year. They're finally pulling the trigger on that to see if that'll make a difference in the stretch to keep her focused and not let, you know, horses either get up to her or pass her. It was a great battle. I'll tell you, I went down to the Belmont Stakes day, and that undercard is just the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, you saw the Ogden Phipps, you saw Flightline in the mile, saw Jack Christopher, you saw a ton of good stuff, and then the Belmont came up and was pretty good too. But, they're trying the blinkers, so don't be surprised because they have been thinking about it for a long time. As I noted in my story, Clariere and Malathot have actually hooked up five times in their career, that's half of Malathot's starts. Yeah. Clariere's been in there. And last time was the first time Clariere actually finished ahead of Malathot. And Steve Asmussen is just very high on her form right now, and they've always liked her. And it's a great rivalry with Malathot, and maybe the scales will get tipped even a little bit more tomorrow in the Shoe V. And we should mention, you know, I played search results in the Ogden Phipps and was trying to get her to the wire. She's running the Molly Pitcher on the Haskell card today, too. So she and Bonnie South coming out of the Ogden Phipps are going to be running
about
at Monmouth today.
She looked so really good, but
yeah.
Not,
well, yeah, and then she didn't get there. Yeah. That's fine, you know. And she had a battle with Latruska early in that race.
Yeah.
She's a very fast horse, and Latruska actually got the worst of it. But four out of that race, there's two of them are split between here and Monmouth today. And hopefully when there's no conflict later in the meet, we'll get them all together again for a reunion in the personal ensign. Would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so far the stakes action has been good up here. It's only going to get even more intriguing. You know, you mentioned the undercard of the Belmont, but
that
subsequently, you know, know, down at Churchill and also in New York. We're looking maybe, you know, Whitney horses like Olympiad and Life is Good. And so that's shaping up to be very intriguing.
Yep.
And the three-year-olds up here will be intriguing. Jim Dandy and Travers, as the three-year-old picture is undefined so far. The second half of the season is going to start to move horses up and put in a little firmer positioning. But part of that summer three-year-old program starts this afternoon with the Haskell Grade 1 event. $1 million up for grabs down in New Jersey. Mile and an eighth. Cyber Knife for Brad Cox and Al Gold coming out of the win in the Matt Wynn. Taba back in the barn of Bob Baffert. White of Barrio for Safi Joseph. Howling Time for Dale Romans. But you and I were talking before we went on the air, and you're looking, as a lot of people are, to see what Jack Christopher can do at the mile and an eighth and see if we validate the talent we've seen so far, and if this one now rises to the top of the class and then can maybe validate that further in the Travers a little bit later on.
Yeah, this is a really big turning point in Jack Christopher's season and career, because he's never run longer than a mile, and the mile and an eighth, you know, most of these in here is not a question at all for them, but it still absolutely is for him. And so this will be sort of a trigger point of pivot point of, are we going to go to the Travers later, or are we suddenly going to maybe work backwards from the BC mile if the distance appears to be not in his wheelhouse? And then meanwhile, you throw in Taba, another lightly raced three-year-old who was brilliant in the Santa Anita Derby. Baffert told the Monmouth people earlier in the week at the draw, he said, first of all, I didn't have my hands on the horse when he ran in the Derby and finished 12th, so he doesn't know what happened there. Maybe there's still some distance question with him a little bit, although he was brilliant going a mile and eighth in the Santa Anita Derby. But it's going to be really interesting to see what Jack Christopher does, because, you know, Chad's trying to get, ideally, three of them, Zandon, and the Preakness winner, Early Voting, who just worked like a couple hours ago for the first time. He had been down at Belmont Park because he was on the fence whether to run him in the Haskell or the Jim Dandy. And then ultimately, after the breeze at Belmont last week, he kind of decided, I don't want to throw him in with Jack Christopher, because their running styles are similar enough that they just beat each other up and cancel each other out. So he figured, you know, Zandon has a different running style from Early Voting, so he's brought him up here and then just breezed him this morning. I didn't see the time. I know he went 5 furlongs in company with somebody else, but we'll grab that later. It's a big question mark, and we're really gonna find some things out about Jack Christopher and the Haskell today.
This is going to be, as I say, an intriguing summer for the three-year-olds with Haskell, Jim Dandy, Travers, Pennsylvania Derby will be in the mix.
And we didn't even mention Epicenter, who's going to be trying to do the Jim Dandy Travers double as well for Steve Asmussen, and who I think still is possibly the best three-year-old male in the country. He has a couple good seconds that could have gone either way. And I remember asking Steve Asmussen on the track at Pimlico right after the Preakness, you know, it's a different way to come in second. He said, this is really getting tired now. We're really tired with second. So he's lurking out there too.
It's going to be a fun summer for the three-year-olds for sure, as well as all the various other divisions, as it typically is up at Saratoga. Also should mention that you have a new set of handicappers in the Gazette, new guys in the box, including our old guy, Jeff Carroll, in the box.
Yep. We got a battalion this year. I mean, Matt Donato, who's been doing it the last couple of years, he's back. We got our friend Gene Kirshner from the Buffalo News. Jeff Carl, you already mentioned, and then Anthony Stabile from NYRA that everybody knows, who's on TV every day. He's the fourth person, and then little old me throwing my 2 cents in at the bottom with my little paragraph that we already talked about. And feel free to read that for the entertainment value, I would say, but don't bet the farm on I had Skims yesterday in the stakes race over the two Chads, so... I don't even know where he finished.
You got to take a little shot every once in a while.
You got to take a little shot every once in a while.
Great coverage daily in the Daily Gazette of Racing. Mike's up in the press box every day doing a lot of great work, running around, as I say, in the morning. Erica Miller, great photo. She had a great photo of me and Eddie after the other day.
She sent it your way, right?
Yeah. We showed it on the show the other morning when I had Eddie on. And He agreed. Yeah, it was a great picture.
We'll both be over at the Oklahoma tomorrow to get Regal Glory, who's working on the turf tomorrow in preparation for the four-star Dave. So it's a good teamwork thing we got going on between me and Erica.
Yeah,
she's tremendous.
Follow both of you guys on Twitter, worthwhile as well.
Yep.
Mike, as always, appreciate the visit. Congratulations on the good work so far in the Gazette.
Thank you. Kicking off
the meet, and I'm sure it will continue on all meet long. Again, highly recommended picking up the Gazette, taking a look at some of that action. We will head to a commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk some of the McPeak runners and more. So stay tuned.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Hello everyone, I'm Scott Vartley and I'm here at the West Condominiums in Saratoga Springs. And guess what? We are down to the home stretch. Everything is two bedrooms and two baths. Come make a selection in one of the greatest condos ever to be built in Saratoga Springs. We're starting in the upper fives and the only rooftop penthouse available now under construction. Wow, just look at this patio. We have a rooftop pool, heated garage, balconies, and a gym. Call me at 518-281-6808.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As mentioned before the break, joined now by a member of the Ken McPeak team. Ken was a little bit under the weather, gave me a call, and I give him a thumbs up for ably helping to produce the show by bringing in a substitute, but an able substitute as well. It's Jack McEntee, the assistant trainer over at the Ken McPeak stable, and we'll hit on some of Ken's runners coming up over the next couple of days and maybe something to look forward to in the future as well. Jake, good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are we?
Very good. Happy to have you on board. And our man Mick behind the camera was asking you when he came on board where the accent is from, and it's from a racing location.
Yeah, it's from Newmarket in England. My dad's a trainer back home in England. Okay. So it's from across the pond.
Well, I was gonna say, how'd you get into the game? But clearly, you've been in it your whole life.
Yeah, I've been in it my whole life. I've got an uncle here that's a trainer. I've got an uncle here that's a bloodstock agent, and another one that's a farm manager. So it's a very big horse racing family, and very lucky to be in it. So,
how long you been here?
Started with Kenny in January.
Okay.
Hopefully I can stay for a while or forever, hopefully. You know, I love this country, I love the racing, so hopefully that's the plan.
Well, you have to ask, is it your first time in Saratoga?
It is my first time here, yeah.
And?
It's what a beautiful place. What a brilliant place. It's so scenic, and you know, the people and the sport, and it's I've never seen anything like it. At 7 o'clock in the morning here, when there's people queuing up outside the races to come in, it's a brilliant, brilliant spectacle.
Yeah, I'd say that all the time. The town is just so into horse racing. The fans are so smart and clued into the game.
Yeah.
It's really different than any other place. All right, let's get into some of the action coming up. Coaching Club American Oaks, you guys will have a runner in there in Butterbean. Butterbean will be number one of this afternoon, but on the replay, we're going to go back to Butterbean's last start. That's over at Prairie Meadows, July 9th. Butterbean's going to be the number four horse here. Gets it done pretty easily. Iowa Oaks, did you guys come out of this performance and immediately think, hey, let's go up to Saratoga and take our shot?
Kenny did, yeah, immediately. She's a filly that we think quite a lot of. She's progressed very nicely with each start. She's come out of the race bouncing. She's licking her feet up every day, and you know, she's training really well. So fingers crossed for today.
Yeah, and as you say, she seems to be getting better. I'm a buyer's guy, and certainly the two most recent starts, including that one, the buyer has jumped up significantly. Do you guys look at the numbers over at the barn? What numbers do you look at?
Yeah, we look at numbers. Numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
And her numbers are getting progressively better. And her works and how she's training, she's getting better, you know. So with the combination of her improving on race day and her improving at home, you know, has led to today. So.
And I'm looking at the most recent work, July 2nd down to Churchill. How long has she been up here?
She's been here just I'd say a week now. She shipped in, but she's trained brilliantly every day. She's thriving at the moment.
So what are you guys expecting? I mean, you're in against a couple of monsters with Secret
There's
Open
two
Nets.
Monsters in there, let's not lie. Yeah. You know, we're not trying to kin anybody here, but she's definitely worth, you know, she's definitely earned her spot in the field. She's third pick in the betting, and the two big guns, they could get racing early and they could, you know, go neck and neck and you know, if there's any pieces to be picked up, you know, hopefully we're there and we can pick it up. So that's kind of the plan.
Got to be in it to win it.
You got to be in it to win it. And you know, she didn't cost too much. She only cost 22,000. And it'd be some story if we could get her grade one placed at least. You know, so that would be, that's kind of the plan.
That is certainly a Kenny Angle kind
of. He's a brilliant, brilliant man at buying a cheap horse.
Yeah, and having him perform very, very nicely. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of monsters tomorrow as well in the Shoe V, Clairiere and Malathat coming out of, we watched it earlier, the Ding Dong Battle in the Ogden Phipps, but you guys have Crazy Beautiful, a millionaire herself. We're going to look at her second place finish most recently in the Lady Jacqueline at Thistledown. Army Wife, the number six, will win. Crazy Beautiful will be the number five. Again, that was the most recent race for her, but as I said, seven wins and 18 starts, $1 million in the bank. How's Crazy Beautiful coming into the Shoe V tomorrow?
She is training very well. We talk about there being two monsters in the race. She's training like a monster at the moment.
Okay.
She's training very well. And, you know, if they were all like her, this game would be easy. You know, she's such a brilliant filly. And, you know, she tries her hardest every time. There's the two big guns in there that we've got to beat. But hopefully she can have a nice trip and a safe trip, and she can go and run her race and like today, you know, almost, if we can run down the two big guns, then let's hope so.
Yeah, as you say, you know, again, 7 wins and 18 starts and $1 million, this is the kind you want. And coming off a nice little effort there at Thistle last time, she'll be intriguing certainly tomorrow. Again, with a couple of monsters in Clarier and Malathat. Wanted to talk also about some horses that maybe we get a chance to look ahead to and, you know, get some thoughts on. We're going to take a look at the Preakness. Creative Minister is going to be the third place finisher in here. Early voting wins, Epicenter second, Creative Minister third. And as I understand it, next start for Creative Minister will be up here at Saratoga.
Hopefully, yeah, fingers crossed. We're looking for the curling at the moment. That's where we're aiming. He worked this morning. He worked 5-8. Worked very nicely. Worked with another horse that we have called Wolf County. The pair of them worked together. And yeah, he's doing very well. He's come out of both the Preakness and the Belmont quite well. The Belmont last start, the track was a little deeper, you know, and he didn't quite get through it as nicely as we won, but he travelled into the race with a lot of zest. And yeah, you know, fingers crossed, his first start back here, we can get him back to winning ways and look forward to the rest of the season.
Yeah, he was, as you say, subsequently fifth in the Belmont Stakes, but you go back earlier in the year, broke the maiden in the second start, then a nice little win at Churchill and an optional claimer in that third in the Preakness. So still lightly raced. Yeah. You would still have to think there's some upside, some blue sky ahead for that one.
Definitely, you know, he's still lightly raced. He's only had the 5 starts. And, he, you know, he was kind of an unlucky loser first time out, maybe second time out he won on the slot, third time out he won and very, very impressively at Churchill, and we threw him straight in the deep end, and he's done nothing but progress from there, really. So hopefully, you know, he's got a big season ahead of him. He's a lovely big strong horse and he does everything correct at home, so fingers crossed for the rest of the season.
Yeah, 5 starts, a couple wins, a second and a third, and again, as you say, in with the big guns and giving it a shot. The curl, I'm assuming curling is potentially leading to a good effort there, obviously. Think about the Travers going down?
Potentially, yeah. Could be the road we go. We're just, you know, we're fingers crossed to get him back to winning ways in the curling, and then we'll see how we go from there.
You say you worked this morning with Frontside or over at the Oklahoma?
Oklahoma track, okay. Yeah, Oklahoma track. We're over there in the annex, and it's a lovely surface out there.
If you're over there, I don't know whether you do, but do you ever bring horses to Clare Court?
Not to Clare Court, we don't know, but every now and again we'll bring them over to the main track, okay. and you know, we school our 2-year-olds or any horses, older horses, that we school them in the paddock over here, so we get about a little bit. You know?
Yeah, very good. Also wanted to get a little update on King Fury. We're going to take a look at Churchill Downs, the Bourbon Trail. That was last September, King Fury. A nice winner there, going to be the number 4 horse in this replay. Subsequently, King Fury has had a number of efforts that weren't quite as good as this one, but again, was kind of knocking heads with some of the bigger players, was in the Clark, was in the Kentucky Cup Classic. But as I say, this was a nice performance going back to last September for King Fury. And again, kind of putting my ear to the ground, as it were, potential start in the Aladar for this one?
Potentially, yeah. I think that's the way we're going. This is a talented horse.
Yeah,
You know, he...
Early on, I really thought, oh, you got one, yeah, good one here.
You know, every day he trains like a champion, this horse. He always puts his best foot forward. And the last day in Turfway when he ran, we just decided we'll give him a bit of a break, try and freshen him up and see if we can sweeten him up and go again from there. And he is training at the moment, lights out. You know, he's training like a really good horse again. He worked this morning, put in a very nice work under his normal exercise rider, Danny Ramsey. And yeah, all systems go. You know, hopefully we can get him back on the score sheet soon.
Yeah, as I said, you know, you're back early in the career, won the Street Sense down at Churchill, and he looked like a real up-and-comer. He's been knocking heads with some very nice horses, so maybe we'll look for him up here again in the Aladar. Also, a couple of horses, and I'm really curious to know what your plans are going forward to both of these, because I went the wrong way. I went with the wrong King of the Peak going back to the Belmont Derby. I was on Tis the Bomb. We're going to watch the replay here. Unfortunately, Tis the Bomb, the number 9 horse, winds up running 9th in the field. But on the front end, number 4, Classic Causeway, gets it done. The other Kenny McPeak horse at 26-1. Twitter was ablaze with, He was the speed. How did everybody not have him as the speed? Well, I was part of that group that did not have him. But we can see Classic Causeway holding on here to win. So give us a little update. Classic Causeway and Tis the Bomb also.
So, you know, he was 26-1, but we fancied him in the barn. We gave him a flick around the Oklahoma grass track here a week before. Danny Ramsey, he rides him every day. He was over the moon with his preparation going into the race. And, you know, we discussed before the race, if he could go anywhere around 48 for the first half, we'd be in with a squeak. And going down the back, when we managed to get a breather into him, and Julian gave him an unbelievable ride that day. And, you know, everything worked out and went to plan, but that was only his first ever start on the turf. So, you know, there's more to come from this horse. He could be anything, really. He's a very talented individual. And, you know, I think he's kind of learning how to race now as well. You know, before, he kind of wanted to rush into things and do things, you know, a little bit on the bridle.
Yeah.
And we're just, you know, trying a couple of different things with him, switching him off. And hopefully now, you know, he's going to kick on from that race, and there could be anything to come from this.
It was a brilliant performance there again at, you know, $55 and change. Do you have something? Are you going to take a shot at the Saratoga part of this series?
So he will go for the Saratoga Derby
okay.
next. Yeah, that's where we'll aim him. He worked yesterday on the grass. He had a sort of 2-minute leg kind of work, and Julian Leperoux sat on him. He said he felt brilliant. So the plan is Saratoga Derby, and then from there on in we'll keep our options open and see where we go.
Well, no one can. He's looking at Royal Ascot next year.
Look, wherever they want to go with him, you know, he could be anything this horse.
And also, Tis the Bomb. What's up next with
him? Tis the Bomb, you know, maybe last time out he didn't show his true self. He didn't show his true ability. This horse is a very special horse.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, maybe the Derby took a little bit extra out of him or something. You know, the Derby's a hard race to come back from. And, you know, he's been running very well up until that point. He won the Jeff Ruby like a very nice horse. He won the, he won the Grade 2 in Keeneland as a 2-year-old very nicely. And, you know, he's another one that's won over a million. You know, I wouldn't rule him out of any wherever he goes next. You know, once he's back on track and we get him back on a clean, even slate, we'll go forward with him. And hopefully we'll see the best of him.
Where's he right now?
He is here in Saratoga. He's a potential for the Saratoga Derby as well. He could run the day before. There's a stake race on the grass going a mile. But we'll see. He'll go one or two.
Okay, sounds good. And finally, 3-year-old filly. We're going to pull up the Indiana Oaks Runaway Wife, runs second to a pretty talented, a kind of up-and-comer in that division, Interstate Daydream for Brad Cox. Interstate Daydream, the number 5, is going to win. Runaway Wife, the number 7, runs second. Give us a little update on her and what we might expect to see.
So she's still in Kentucky at the moment. She's currently training over in Churchill. She's doing very well. You know, this day, I'm not saying she was an unlucky loser, but we were wide, you know, and the winner's a very good horse. And we kind of had a wide trip, and we got, you know, the winner kind of outstayed us in the end that day, maybe. But she's also a very talented filly. I'm not certain where she's going next, but she could potentially, you know, there could potentially be a start up here for her, or, you know, maybe something at Ellis or something like that. But she's a nice filly.
Yeah, you guys have a string at Ellis, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of 2-year-olds down there.
Yeah, we run horses from Churchill over to Ellis and Keeneland in Lexington. So.
Yeah, Ellis has been a kind of a nice spot for the 2-year-olds over the past maybe 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, we had a nice 2-year-old win there yesterday, and we had another 2 win there the week before. So, yeah, it's a good place to start horses off anyway, that's for sure.
Speaking of 2-year-olds, tomorrow you have Corningstone, who I assume, being out of the Damn Ice Woman, it's a reference to Anchorman.
Yes, very much so.
Corningstone, third career start, and second in the debut, and then followed up with a nice third, moving from the as still a maiden, into a stakes race. What do you expect from Corningstone tomorrow?
So, first time out, she was second to Just Cindy, who won the Schuylerville here. And our filly was probably only 80% ready that day. You know, she's always shown a lot of speed, and we've kind of, you know, she's going to go long for the first time tomorrow, so we're just going to hopefully get her into a nice rhythm. And we think she's quite a talented filly. Last time out at Prairie Meadows, she was an unlucky loser. Definitely, we got left, and you know, nothing really went to plan that day. If we rerun that race, she wins next time out. So we're hopeful tomorrow. You know, it's first time going long, so you never know. But Saratoga's, it's where everybody wants to win, and this filly's talented enough to win here for sure. So hopefully she can run a nice race anyway.
Before we let go, any other two-year-olds we maybe should watch coming up during the meet?
We've got a few very talented ones.
Toss one out.
I'm going to throw you one. We've got a nice filly called Mo Shiro.
Okay.
She's a very talented filly. She could potentially be anything. Mo Shiro.
I'm making a note. We appreciate it. And again, best wishes to Ken. He was a little under the weather today, but an able replacement with Jack McAtee as his assistant. We appreciate your visiting this morning. And as everybody on the Saturday show, enjoy dinner on us. Jacob
and
Anthony's downtown. We appreciate
you
showing up. And good luck on the rest of the meet.
Let's hope so. Let's hope we have a good meet.
All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, Sal Kumin is in the house. We'll talk his nice win yesterday and some horses he has coming up as well. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
The lineup, they're all set now for the juvenile fillies turf. 14 of them across the track. Leaders set on their way. And of the dance on the outside, broke a little sideways with Bro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be Stipe running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane, stop shopping, Maria's got a lot left. Stop shopping, Maria goes on, Sweet Cat is right there, hard not to like, Royal Body is running on. Past the eighth ball, they come, stop shopping, Maria, full of runs, still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late, here's Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop chopping over there. Stephanie's Kitten's water.
The chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won at just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, happy to be joined now by a prominent owner in the game, Sal Kumin. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
No better opportunity to bring you in than after a stakes win up at Saratoga.
I was going to say, we got one. Got one early, which takes a little pressure off for the meet. So it's great to be here.
And let's start out. You know, we've had you on before, and we've hit on this, but we always have new viewers in the summertime when Saratoga rolls around. Just talk a little bit about how you got interested in the game, how you got into the game, and then moved on to ownership as well.
Sure, yeah. I grew up in Boston and had no exposure to horse racing. I had a good friend of mine, Jay Hanley, who spent a lot of time growing up in Saratoga, about 7 years ago or so now, introduced me to Chad Brown and said, I think you're going to like this guy. I think you'll really like the horses. It's got a kind of a deal element, and bring your kids and go with your friends. And so we put a little group together, and we ended up buying four horses, and Chad kind of quarterbacked it for us, and we got very lucky at the beginning. We ended up with Lady Eli in our first batch, and two other horses that went to the Breeders' Cup that first year. So we had that beginner's luck at the start, which is a good way to begin. And it's been, it's been history since then. We've got a lot more involved and have a bigger stable and have been having a really good time here for the last 7-8 years.
It was funny yesterday. You were doing the post-race interview and Chad was doing a little photography work, clicking some phone pictures. You mentioned Lady Eli, and I'm just wondering, because you've had a lot of great horses over a short span, I'm just wondering, given her story and whatnot, the time off, the comeback, and was she the favorite, or can you make a favorite?
The favorites are hard. I've got a list of 4 or 5, but she's at the top. Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't have been involved in the game the way we were. She is named after my wife, Elizabeth, whose nickname is Eli, so if I don't pick her, then I probably get myself into some trouble. But the story of obviously how brilliant she was, and then, going through those highs, and then, when she got sick and stepped on the nail, just the, kind of seeing the other side of the sport, and, remember taking the train out to Belmont from, we were living in New York at the time, and just sitting there while she had her, feet soaked in ice buckets, and you see the highs and the lows, and she'll always be the favorite. I think it'll be hard to stop her.
Incredible career, almost $3 million, 10 wins and 14 starts. That is a heck of a way to start the career. But I mean, you talk about being in the game for 7 years, as I tend to do the night before, I did a little research and pull up some articles and whatnot, look for quotes, and I laughed when I saw you've been in the game for 7 years, as you say. There was an article in the Blood Horse leading into last year's Breeders' Cup where you had 8 starters in the Breeders' Cup. But you're quoted as saying, we had 5 or 6 horses of a lifetime over the past few years, and this looked like a rebuilding year. That's a nice 7 years when you have 5 or 6 horses of a lifetime.
Yeah, we have had a really good run. We got just extremely lucky early, and we've always surrounded ourselves with good people picking out the horses for us, good people managing our stable. And obviously using trainers that we like and we think are talented, and that combination has allowed us to do obviously pretty well. We don't do too much of the work. They do it all for us, which is great.
Talk about how you play the game, because I know you're in a lot of partnerships as well. How do you acquire your horses, and what's your thought process?
Sure, yeah. I own all my horses with a couple of buddies. It's the same group, and we're sort of even partners, and they let me do most of the picking of the horses, just because they're a little bit less involved in it. We've got a John Panicott and Amanda Motz who work directly with us, and they help us manage our stable. And then we use lots of different bloodstock agents to help us buy horses. We've used different ones throughout time. Sometimes we let the trainers help us. And we come up with a plan at the beginning of every year. It changes every year. There's been years where we've bought very few yearlings and really focused on proven horses, bringing horses over from Europe. A year like last year, we actually brought more yearlings than normal. We generally try to be somewhere about 50-50 in terms of proven horses that have already run, and then horses that are new and we're buying them as yearlings or 2-year-olds and they haven't run yet. On almost all of our horses, probably 80%, we partner with somebody else. So we average owning about 40% of the horse. We just think it's more fun to win with a couple partners, and we rather spread our risk around. And we've met some great people that way, and I think that's always going to be a big part of what we do. And I think the buying horses that are already running has been something that now more people are doing, but I think when we started it was a little less popular, and it's been a good way for us to be able to feel like we're adding more value because we have more information than at the sales.
You talk about spreading the risk around. You're a hedge fund guy, right, outside of the horse racing?
Yep.
What is the is there an easy explanation of a hedge fund?
Well, I would say we run a financial services business. We run a pool of capital, and we're just trying to generate good returns for our investors. So hedge fund just means we have the ability to be really flexible in what we do. We can buy stocks or we can short stocks and kind of bet both ways.
But in my mind, I'm thinking you're investing in a way that spreads the risk a little
Correct.
Bit. And so I'm wondering, Correct. Is there skills from that area that you can bring to the horse racing game?
I think there is. I think the biggest thing, honestly, is our business is very much about betting on people. We've got lots of analysts and portfolio managers that run capital for us. And we spend a lot of time, diligencing them, trying to understand what motivates them, trying to feel like they have some informational edge or something that they do that we think is special and repeatable and scalable and all those things. We look at the horse business the same way. We're trying to find trainers that are the right size. And sometimes they go through stages. Maybe we think they're too big. Or we also don't feel that every trainer is best with every horse. And I think, most people in our seat have a trainer, a bloodstock agent, and they do everything one way. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but our view is there's a lot of data that's available out there that we also use in our day job, and that not everyone is great at training every horse. And so we try to spread our horses out and put them in what we think is the highest probability to succeed, and we get it wrong a lot. But we feel like it just increases our chances in a game that's obviously pretty hard.
Yeah, you know, you talked about a lot of data out there, and I always like to ask, you know, trainers and owners and whatnot, do you guys, as you're kind of planning, hey, where do we go next, do you look at numbers, and what numbers do you look at?
We look at a lot of numbers. We look at a lot of numbers. We look at a lot of sales data. You know, when we're buying yearlings, we go back and look at years of who's bought what and who's bought what successfully. We've changed some of the people that have bought horses for us due to some other people doing well and not well. Yeah. And that's a big part of it. I also think not everyone is good at buying every type of horse. So we have some people that buy dirt colts for us, and we have some people that focus on buying proven horses in Europe. And so we use data to, and then you have to leave it to the experts, right?
Yeah,
We'll say, look, we want to buy 10 fillies to 150 grand or less to focus on dirt. This is the person we think has the highest probability to succeed. And so we're just trying to increase our odds that way. And then we're not good enough to be able to make the decisions, and we know, we step back and we've set the budget and told them kind of what range to stay in, and then we leave and let them do their thing. And I think that's helped us a little bit be a little bit more successful.
Hard to argue with the record so far, certainly. And part of that record was yesterday, Dolce Zell in the Lake George, trained by Chad Brown, over Eminent Victor, also trained by Chad Brown. We're going to watch the stretch run here. It'll be number 5, Dolce Zell, over number 6, Eminent Victor, in a nail biter. Give us your thoughts as they came down the stretch.
This was heart attack city. You know, Irad had worked out a great trip, got to the rail, saved a lot of ground. I actually saw his brother in front of him, so I thought we were going to be in pretty good shape there. And Jose didn't seem to move as quickly as I was hoping he would. But Irad did a great job kind of poking through the hole. I wasn't sure if we won, to be honest. We have a seat sit up in a box, and I didn't want to head down until I saw the post-it, just because I'm pretty superstitious, being from Boston with all those close championship years in the early days. It was great. I mean, the Chad did a phenomenal job. You know, we ran the horse back a few times somewhat quickly, and he had pointed to this race with some good spacing, and the horse ran great. So we'll probably roll her back here at the end of the meet in the Lake Placid a little bit longer, see if she can go a little longer. And but she's been a nice horse, and obviously Nicholas to watch again bought her for us in France, and has done a great job for us.
Do you go to any of the auctions in France or in Europe, or are you looking for proven performers when you're over there?
Yeah, I don't go anywhere. I've got the three kids. I'm spending most of my summer on the sidelines of lacrosse fields screaming at my children, and so I don't get to any of this stuff. But I follow it. So we'll do a prep call before the sales. They'll tell us the few we like. We'll talk about prices. We'll watch replays. John, Amanda, and I will sort of have a conversation.
But from Europe, it's proven performers and auctions as well. You'll
correct,
play
correct. More proven horses.
Are you gonna be participating over here in a week?
Oh yeah,
week or so?
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll start to get loaded and got locked and loaded for next year. It feels crazy because the 2-year-olds have barely started running, and you're kind of back coming up with a plan for next year with not really knowing how you've done with this crop, but. That's how it works. You got to get back involved.
You mentioned on the sidelines at lacrosse. That was part of my research, too. I didn't realize you played at Johns Hopkins.
I did.
Nice.
I did. I had a lot of fun. Yeah. Great experience. And I'll tell you, I'm having more fun now just watching my kids play than I ever did playing. I mean, it's so much fun. The game has changed. I mean, we're spending our weekends in Delaware and Maryland, and we're going to California for a tournament in a couple of weeks. I mean, it's...
Oh, kids these days, different from when I was in school. You had a season, you played in your school. Now it's, you're all up. I got a great nephew who's a pretty good ball player. They live in Arkansas, and he's at a tournament in Texas and Illinois. And
it's crazy. It's crazy, but it's fun. I think when it's gone, when it ends, I think everyone says you miss it, so I'm trying to enjoy it the most I can.
Well, from what I understand, you're back in the game as well down in Albany.
Yes. We got we brought an indoor team here, and we had our first season with the Firewolves. They made the playoffs and got knocked out by the team that lost in the championship, and the fan base started to build. Obviously there was still some COVID this year, but we're looking forward to really getting that going. It's a great game.
I think the indoor game maybe even a little more fun to watch.
I agree.
Wanted to hit on a couple others as well. In the Caress today, Caravelle, we're going to look at the Intercontinental. Last time Caravelle be the number 7 horse. She won this race last year. I think because of that and the race last time, you have to come into this afternoon with some confidence.
Yeah, I really like this horse. Yeah. You know, this is only be our second or third race since we've owned a piece of her, and she's, you know, Brad Cox cannot be more excited about how she's coming into the race. He really, really likes her. So, you know, I'm excited. We've got Miss J. McKay in there also, who, you know, I expect to run well too. They'll be right next to each other. The race is actually tough. It's tougher than I thought. So, you know, and we're coming from the one hole, which means she's got to kind of break and get out of there. But I think she'll run really well today.
Yeah, she's had a really kind of nice, fun career. And as I said, won this race last year, comes in good form for Brad. So, but as you say, it's kind of a salty race. Yeah. You also have a runner down at Monmouth this afternoon in the United Nations. We're going to take a look at Trebuven winning, but at Hamo running second. Trebuven is going to be the number 7 horse. At Hamo, the number 4. This is from the Manhattan in the middle of June. But Hamo comes back in the United Nations this afternoon. I'm assuming you will have the simulcast signal fired up in the box. And what are you expecting this afternoon?
Exactly right. Yeah, I love Adamo today. I think there's some sort of pesky speed coming out of a couple of other races with some horses that I think are going to make it hard for Trebuven on the lead. I think he'll go, and we'll see what happens.
I mean, in this race, it was too tough to catch him.
Yeah, and he's doing great, and I won't be shocked if he wins. But I'm just worried about the pace. I think he was able to kind of get away with what he needed to get away with here. Adamo's been, you know, second, third, you know, kind of hanging around in all these big races. I think he's going to get the pace he needs to run into today, and he's got a better post than Gufo, who obviously is going to be pretty stiff competition in there. But that would be my pick of the day. I really like the horse in there.
I like that. Let's get a little update. Also, I pulled up going back to July 2nd, the Nassau up at Woodbine. We are going to take a look at that stretch run as well, and we're going to watch Crystal Cliffs run second behind Lady Spite Spear. Lady Spite Spear is the number 2 horse, Crystal Cliffs the number 4 horse. And again, this was fairly recently on July 2nd. What might be next for Crystal Cliffs?
Was this the one that did, was this the Dead Heat? I think this.
Oh, you're right. It is the. You're absolutely right. It is the Dead Heat.
I only remember because it doesn't happen very often.
She was listed second in the on the. But it is the Dead Heat. You are correct.
Which is good. This was an amazing race. Another one that at the end. I mean, I watched it 10 times. I couldn't tell if we won or didn't win. Graham's done a terrific job with this filly. I think she'll probably run in the next one at Woodbine.
Okay.
But we'll look around and kind of monitor some of these other races. You know, there's a chance, you know, she goes to Churchill. You know, they're going to run that have that big day there, so we'll see. But I would expect to see her at Woodbine.
Okay. And finally, I also wanted to take a look at Sacred Life. We have a replay going back to the Monmouth Stakes back in the middle of June. Sacred Life is going to be the number 6 horse here. And I pulled up the works last night and just worked. Yesterday here at Saratoga. So what are you looking forward to for Sacred Life?
This horse is doing really well. Chad's going to run this horse at Churchill in Arlington Million and said it might be the only horse he sends. I mean, he's very excited about the way the horse is coming into this race. So he's been one of those horses, if you look back at his races, when he's really good, he's very good. And then when he's not really good, he's less good. And I think he's coming into this one in good shape. You know, we'll see how that turf course is at Churchill.
Yeah, have you gotten any word?
You know, I heard they were going to move it. I heard they're going to Keeneland. And now I heard they're going to have everything. So it's all one day. I think they'll probably roll with it. I've heard good and bad mixed, so I'm not really sure what to make of it.
Given the weather horses, that we've had, you know, over the past month or everybody's had, it's going to be interesting to see how it's shaped up given the time off they had. Hopefully, I'm sure they got the sprinklers out and, you know, hopefully everything works out well for them over that day.
I hope so.
Sal, I appreciate the conversation this morning. Congratulations on the stakes win. Looking, you got any 2-year-olds we should watch?
I'm trying to think of anything I really like so far. We have a horse with Chad, turf horse, called Take Me to Jimmy.
Okay.
Probably run book 3 on the turf. They run well. We have one in race 1 today called Coach Petro, named after my college lacrosse coach from Hopkins.
Okay.
So we'll be watching him with Brad Cox. I know Chad really likes his horse in there. So I think it's going to be a tough one to wing. He's got a Kingman that mile and a 16th on the turf, which normally is a race that he does a pretty good job of. But Brad Cox is really happy with how this horse is doing. So I think we got a shot in there, but we'll see. Got some more coming in California, but I don't get too high on him until we see him run.
Let me go into my envelope here because I forgot to pull it out earlier. But as always on Saturdays, you get dinner at Pennell's on us. So
awesome.
Enjoy a a night out at Pinnell's, I always say the lasagna is very good, but the steak, people talk, I go for the lasagna.
I'm going for the lasagna. I'm sticking with you.
There you go.
Thank you very
much.
So
appreciate it.
Good to see you. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America on a Saturday, a beautiful Saturday here at Saratoga. Again, swing over early, get an autograph from the trainers on a piece of memorabilia, make a donation to the Lustgarten Foundation. They do great work, and so take advantage of that this afternoon as well. Have a great day at the races here at Saratoga. Take a look at Little Monmouth. Don't forget, Del Mar is underway as well. We'll be back in tomorrow, 9 o'clock for Handicapper Support, 10 o'clock for Racing Across America. We'll see you then.
Generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.